Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 20th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the educator and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well.
That's good. And we're also pleased to be joined by our longtime climate maven and guy who knows everything, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. So on this show, we tend to bounce back and forth from various scales of climate information, right? We go global meetings, we go U.S. policy. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about Massachusetts state policy addressing climate change, and that's because we happen to live in the great state of Massachusetts with the oldest written constitution in the world and all kinds of good stuff. I have the sacred cod hanging in the state house. Anyway, I'll just remind you. We'll turn the show over to our two co-hosts in a minute. But just remember that 2008, and then again in 2016, the state of Massachusetts passed laws calling for a move towards green energy reduction of emissions, and part of that effort was to mandate that a certain amount of wind energy, that is to say wind turbines, be built before the year 2030 or so. Excuse me. And I'll tell you, in this, about 3 years ago, so what they do is, the way it works is that the state and the federal government got together over the course of the last 10 years and mapped out the ocean resources off of New England, in fact, off of the entire country. And that was a boring but very important first step to map out where the wind was and what areas of the ocean were plausibly useful for wind turbine installation. Then about, what was it, a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was an auction. Right, so here's what the federal government does. They auction off a lease to a plot of land or a plot of water out in the middle of the ocean onto which you can build a wind turbine if you're so inclined. The auction for those leases a few years ago generated about $300,000, not very much, a disappointing amount for various reasons. But this past week, there was another auction for another set of properties off south of Martha's Vineyard, Cape Cod, to where people would have the option to build wind turbines, big companies. And it turns out that it was a huge success. Do either of you guys have that number, or do you want me to quote the number? I'll quote the number. That's a jump ball. That was a high school quiz. You guys didn't hit the buzzer fast enough.
It was, I know it's enough.
$405 million came in as the amount of money that would be paid by several big companies to build wind turbines off the coast of Massachusetts, which is a super good thing. Would you say that that's a good thing, DR?
Absolutely. And again, we've made this point before, to think about, after all these years of attempts by fossil fuel interest and NIMBY types to sabotage and kill wind power in this region, with the savage and vicious attempts and really disgusting attempts to destroy the Cape Wind project, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. see wind flourishing in this region now, it's a long overdue vindication for those who have been fighting for a long, long time now to make sure that, you know, clean energy gets its due, right. Here in this region.
Yeah, and I think go ahead, Mariah.
You mentioned the ones that in 2015, so there were two land leases that were actually closer to the shore. So they mm-hmm. were easier and cheaper to develop. And in 2015, they sold for less than $300,000 a piece, right? And so now you have these $405 million pieces of land that are further out and harder to develop.
Right.
And what I read was that the reason people want those is largely due to the 2016 legislation that you spoke of at the beginning, that has really encouraged this right. growth. And I think also, to your point, DR, about the NIMBY, is that some people are relieved that these are a little further offshore so that they won't be as much in the face of everyone. Although it's caused some fisher people to say, hey, we're still going to be troubled, but our fishing industry is still sort of under threat. So Elizabeth Warren is pushing back a little bit to make sure that this won't impact, or that their needs are also being addressed. So it's good to see all sides kind of being considered. But I'm 100% with you, DR. It's so amazing to see this. This fantastic support, yeah, for it's, what is it, 44,100 megawatts of wind generation, enough to power 1.5 million homes.
Just to hammer the point home that I think you both made, but it's can't be repeated enough. This success is a consequence of good policy, right? People who listen to this podcast, people who care about the issue, have pushed for creative policies and clean energy, and it takes a long time to get there. But here you have a thing where all of a sudden you've got big companies. I think it's the Norwegian company. There's a couple of big players that are interested because they know there's a market there. There's a market supported by the state of Massachusetts, and it's one of these things where it will take off, and eventually the subsidies will be less important. But I think there was an article by Dave Roberts a few weeks ago. We were going to talk about it, but I don't think we ever got to it. About how good policy encourages the development of technology, and that it is a myth to think that you need to build a better solar panel. Because that doesn't get you anywhere, right? You need a market to sell that solar panel into, and that's where the government comes in. And this is, I think, another example of that, where the government has done the right thing, set up the policy, and now you see this serious interest in wind. So I think it's a good thing.
So I actually looked up this company, which used to be called Statoil. Now it's called Equinor. Mm-hmm. This is one of the companies that bought this offshore wind lease. And they have a great background to their name, where they say Equi is for equitable and Nor is for Norway, their pride in Norway. But they used to be called Statoil, so they were an oil and gas company. I mean, and I think they also they were sort of a diversified energy company. But on their website they say that essentially, why would we keep pushing oil and gas when clearly renewables are the future? And so on their website they say the biggest transition our modern day energy systems has ever seen is underway, and we aim to be at the forefront of this development. And if I was an energy company, that's how I would be thinking right now. Why would you want to be on the lagging edge of technology when you could be on the leading edge and be the one who's getting these land leases and way ahead of the game in that respect?
I think it's an absolutely good point. I mean, the way I heard it the first time was that the railroad people went out of business because they thought they were railroaders, and they didn't realize they were actually in the transportation business. Now, you would think that every railroad company would figure, oh, let's go get some trucks and start a trucking line. And you said the magic word. I mean, ExxonMobil thinks it's an energy company, but really they're an oil company, whereas Statoil is the model of using all that brain power to make clean energy. It's a good point.
I mean, I was going to say, if only Charles and David Koch were that forward thinking.
Yes. Well, so there's that. So this is a consequence of good policy. But then there's a follow-on good policy that is in the offing now, which now at this point seems abstract and kind of difficult to understand, but we hope in a few years it will come to fruition as well. And that is that the state of Massachusetts, under the leadership of Charles Baker, called for a study of the transportation needs of the Commonwealth over the next, 20 years or so. What's going to take over the next 20 years to have Massachusetts a good transportation system? Because what they see now is basically Route 128, 93, all these roads are congested. The MBTA is collapsing, or so people might say. There's lots of transportation problems here in the state. And you see oncoming climate issues where we need to reduce carbon emissions from automobiles. And so there was a report released this past week. If either of you guys had a chance to read it, it was 275 pages. I only read 273 of them. I left the last two pages out. I didn't go through the footnotes on the last two pages.
I'm still working on the National Climate Assessment.
Okay.
1,600 pages, still going through that.
You only got 400 of those then.
Yeah, yeah.
This transport was pretty good. It's aspirational, to be sure, but it does call for an increase in electric vehicle charging, and mostly what it does is focus on issues that sort of connect climate change with transportation. And one of the big ideas falling out of that, I think, is kind of a price on gasoline, right? Did either of you guys see that? I mean, I know it's a complex and abstract thing, but
I did. I peeked at it, and it is. I mean, the two-pronged solution is important, right? I think that's fundamental to a lot of climate change solutions, is that they often aren't just the solution to climate change, but they're also a solution to some other problem, right? So, for example, environmental justice, or in this case, the congestion. If they upgrade the public transportation and the walkability and the bikeability of cities, then there are less cars on the road, and that makes everything better for everybody.
Right,
and
right.
In addition, solves climate change. And that win-win kind of project can be a great way to see how climate change is a successful endeavor. Climate action is a successful endeavor to embark upon, because it's, you know, creates jobs and all of those other things. I mean, certainly the wind energy project is going to create a ton of jobs while they're building those windmills. So I think that's an important aspect of it. What I couldn't find a whole lot about was how it's going to be paid for. I know you mentioned that the gasoline, but there was something about maybe like changing some of the toll prices, but Baker doesn't seem to be on board about that. And when he was pressed on how he thought it was going to be paid for, it sounds like he didn't say much. So
I think he said something like congestion pricing, right? Congestion pricing is the big bear in the room, right? Which would charge you a fare, a toll proportional to the time, or depending on the time of day you're traveling and how busy the roads are.
That's cheaper during off peak.
Yeah, not very popular. But to your point, Mariah, one of the things that I saw somewhere in the report, again, there's so much information, can't pretend we've absorbed it all, but there's sort of this shift from counting vehicle throughput, that is the number of vehicles going down a road per hour, to how many people go down the road per hour. So person throughput instead of vehicle throughput. And when you cut through that jargon, it talks about, you know, mass transit, dedicated bus lanes, things like that, to sort of get people from one place to another. And as you say, it doubles back into all kinds of equitable arguments and having transportation for all of the city and not just for the wealthier suburbs and yada, yada, yada. But that report exists. It needs to be taken apart by people like climate hawks, basically, and try and, you know, take the best ideas out of that and keep pushing it, right? And again, it's sort of the position of the wind turbine leasing stuff 4 or 5 years ago. It's all this unclear, but eventually it's going to come to something real. And so there's that. There's this big report. I encourage you to read it. If you can't go to sleep at night, keep it by your bedside. You know, you can get through a page a night and it'll knock you out, I'm sure. But the other thing, which is more, I think, immediate, it's connected to the transportation question. It's more immediate, and there's an analog of what the state and the region has tried to do in the past. DR, can I look at you to tell us about this analog of the regional greenhouse gas initiative that they're thinking about in a transportation context?
Yes, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and I believe the District of Columbia, they're looking at putting together essentially a REGI for transportation, a way to cap greenhouse gas emissions from transportation and basically use the revenues generated by the cap to invest in clean energy projects. Mm-hmm. Obviously, by putting a price on emissions from transportation, you'll be encouraging more of a transition to EVs and hybrids. And it seems to be, you know, one of the boldest initiatives yet, almost a Green New Deal on wheels, if you will. it'll be interesting to see how the details will be fleshed out. I believe over the next year, they're going to sort of put together the building blocks of this proposal, and you're right that it was based on the regional greenhouse gas initiative, which has been a wild success in terms of reducing emissions from power plants.
So just tell me for a minute, though, remind everybody what the regional, either one of you, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, RGGI, which goes by the nickname REGGIE, what did it mean? What was the underlying idea, the germ of the idea in a tweet?
Cap and trade, basically, to cap emissions from power plants. And basically, you know, trading emissions permits, and that helped to significantly reduce emissions from power plants. And now as a result of its success, the main driver of emissions in this region is transportation, we're going to see, and I'm very confident that this model will in fact work for transportation.
Well, and I think that the regional nature of it. So one of the knocks on a state like Massachusetts putting a cap and trade policy on the power plants in the state was that power comes in and out of the state from other places. So by joining up with adjoining states, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, New York, all of a sudden you have a much bigger market and mass, and everything stays in that region for REGGIE and the electric power generation system. So that whole thing worked. I think some of the same thing is true for transportation, because one of the biggest complaints about controlling the cost of or putting a price on gasoline specifically is that you would just drive to the next state and buy your gasoline out of state. So you have to have this large geographic area that all is in the same market, and then you get much better behavior of that kind of cap and trade system, right?
Mm-hmm. And just to add a little more context to that, the REGGIE for the power plants has reduced emissions by about 40% since below 2005 levels, mm-hmm. without raising the average electricity prices. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember off the top of my head the statistics of how much money it has actually saved the states that are involved in it, but they've actually seen a great increase in. Here we go. It's 3.6 higher economic growth than the rest of the U.S.
Yeah.
You said 6.
Plowing that money back in. I guess that's one distinction of the REGGIE for power plants to REGGIE for transportation, in the sense that I think the way it'll work is that there'll be a cap on how much. I suppose how much gasoline can be sold. So I guess this is what has to be worked out. But a cap on the emissions from gasoline, which that cap keeps being reduced every year, the people who bring fuel into the region have to pay that. That money gets passed on to the consumer, the people who drive their cars. And I saw somewhere that the average payment per month would be something like $7 a month for each person driving. And then all that money gets scooped back up and put into regional green energy transportation systems or something, right? So that loop of where the revenue is going, again, is something that has to be worked out and is a fairly tough chestnut to solve, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think there was a tweet by a Blue Mass group basically saying that on these clean energy projects, there should be a sign saying your REGGIE transport dollars at work, something along those lines. Basically to make people, you know, recognize that, you know, there are real tangible benefits to this policy.
Right. I think that's, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of risk in it because, you know, I don't think that the cap and trade for the REGGIE for transportation should be viewed as a carbon tax or gasoline tax, but you know how that's going to be. You know that is how it will be portrayed, and that's a tough sell, right? People go crazy over this stuff. And so you're right. You have to come back and convince everyone they're getting value for that dollar, and so that everyone knows that it's going to a good place. Mm-hmm. The other thing I saw was, again, from Blue Mass Group, that once you join up in a multi-state effort, you are now being held back by the slowest state in the group, whereas Massachusetts should be racing ahead and doing some of this stuff on its own. And so there's also that tension that you don't want to get sucked into waiting 10 years for all the states on the Eastern Seaboard to get together and decide this is a good thing to do, because it'll be too late, right? Massachusetts needs to move sooner. But there you go.
It's going to be very interesting to see, particularly in New Jersey, in Virginia, the 2021 gubernatorial races and how this initiative factors in, because presumably those who are, you know, trying to get a certain vote will try to demagogue this as much as possible. It'll be obviously on the defenders of these policies to make the most persuasive case in favor of these policies.
And that's what we're going to help out with. We're going to be sending our best ideas down to Virginia to solve any questions. All right, well, we got to put it down there. That's the Massachusetts update for the week. Let me tell you that we'll put up links to what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. And we also put up a link on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction, where you can find, you can find the links to the blog. And then in the blog, you can find the hot links to the various stories we talk about. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, almost all those other directories. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. Please rate us. It helps the show. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
DR, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Hey, we'll talk to you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.